You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us. Many of us go through life wondering, why does my neighbor, why does my coworker, why does my relative happen to have a better handle on how to get through a day, especially in the workplace? They don't seem to get as stressed out. They don't seem to be worried about anything. Everything they do seems to turn out perfect, or at least turns out better than myself. That's not something that's necessarily always innate, but many of us can learn skills that can make our lives much better, both in, you know, in our personal lives, but especially in the workplace. You never know from one day to the other what to expect, but skill sets are very, very important, and a new book came across my desk about a week ago. The title of the book is Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. And my guest this week is Adaira Landry. She's a faculty member at Harvard Medical School and affiliated with Brigham and Women's in Boston. And she's also the co-author of this book, along with Risa Luis. But the book is written pretty much, and I really mean this, Adaira. This was written in a way that you, I, or anybody else can understand. That some people say, "Oh, geez, it just seems beyond anything I could comprehend." No, very straightforward. Some really good techniques here that can improve your ability to really take it up a notch and become a better player, both in your personal life and in the workplace. So, with that said, Adaira, let me ask you right off the bat: does any of this go back to maybe your own personal life? I mean, sometimes people say, "Well, the inspiration for the book was that, you know, I too had issues, and I thought once I learned how to cope with it, or how I learned to get more better skill sets, I was able to do better in life." Did it start with that?
It did. First, I just want to say thank you, and that was such a great introduction. I really loved it. Yes, this book started from my perspective, and Dr. Risa E. Lewis has her own perspective too, but for me, I came into this book really wanting to carry forward my own journey and my own struggles with navigating the workplace. So I am a physician, I'm an educator, I'm a mentor in the Department of Emergency Medicine and at Harvard Medical School. And when I first started this journey, I was with a cohort of other faculty members. We were all hired at the same time. And I noticed that of this cohort, about three or four of them were just accelerating their careers in a very different way than I was. And they seemed to have more free time. They seemed to be getting more grants and publications and national speaking opportunities. They had a ton of mentorship and sponsors around them. And I didn't really feel like I had that. It didn't feel like we were, you know, taking the same journey, though we were in the same institution and had the exact same role as being physicians in this department. And so, you know, on one day I was working clinically and I saw one of my peers, right? And I said, "How is it possible that you're getting all of these accolades? Like, how are you getting promotions and how are you getting all of these like leadership and training opportunities? Like, how are you finding people to nominate you and put you forward so many times?" And he looked at me and he said, "Well, that's the wrong thing. You have the wrong way of thinking. No one is doing this for me. I'm doing it all on my own. If I spot an opportunity I want, I go after it, so much so that I even write my own letters of recommendation, so that when I go to someone and I say, 'Please put me forward for this opportunity,' I've already drafted the letter of recommendation. The activation energy is much lower for this person to help support me." And when he told me that, I was shocked. I was shocked, truly. I thought that the idea, the practice of nominating yourself as well as writing your own letter of recommendation, that felt actually quite taboo to me, because no one else was telling me that they're doing that.
Right.
You know, when he told me that he's writing his own letters of recommendation, I said, "Oh my God, does HR know? Is he going to get in trouble one day?" And over time, you know, I told other people, in secret, I said, "Guess what he told me?" And I found out that everyone is doing this. And many people will draft their own letters of recommendation. Many people will ask to be nominated. But it was those first moments in my career where I realized there is a playbook out there on how to navigate the career space, the workplace. And some people, like my peer, had access to that playbook, had access to the small micro skill of advocating for yourself, drafting your own letter of recommendation, and I did not have access to that. And I was under the impression that someone at some point in time was going to come save my career and say, you know what, Adira, you haven't been recognized. Let me do that for you. But no one had done that, right? And I work amongst amazing peers, and even my colleagues who were doing all of this stuff early on. They're amazing, and it was deserved. But what I'm saying is they were getting everything, and I was waiting. And Risa has a very similar experience. And so we both came to this book really understanding that there are skill sets that some of us are taught or told or we recognize very early on in our career, and we're able to just play that playbook from front cover to the back cover and just navigate various situations really well. And then there are those of us who don't have access to that information, and we're left wondering, how does everyone else seem to have it figured out?
And the amazing thing is, as you said, it's two things that came to mind here that stuck right out for me. Microskills emphasizes that being successful should not require self-sacrifice. I thought that was so poignant because the first thing people think is, oh, God, I'm going to have to give up my whole personal life to achieve the goals I want, to be mm-hmm. recognized in my professional career. I don't agree with that either. And I think when you do that, you're adding so much more pressure to yourself, and that compounds the problem of trying to get to the next step. So you recognize that right off the bat. And the other thing being that we've got to take care of ourselves. So many times I hear people say, not now, I've got to be aware, and you can tell that they're extremely stressed mm-hmm. out, myself included. I'm sure you have those days as well. But you really, and you hear this, you hear people say, you know, you got to take some time for yourself. Hearing and acting on it are two entirely different things, but I think you emphasize it in such a way that you make it very clear that you can have success, but you know you must also take care of you, and that means taking care of your body, your mind, not getting so stressed out. But again, as you've talked about, it goes back to personal experience. So with that said, did writing the book? I mean, I'm sure when you recognize the fact that, geez, is there a playbook out there? If not, then I'm gonna write one for myself. Was the process of writing it also a way of achieving or going to the next level for you?
Writing this book was an incredibly strategic move. So one of my jobs at Harvard is that I'm an advisor for Harvard Medical School, and I advise mentees in many ways that's similar to what the content is in the book. Mm-hmm. And early on, when I was trying to navigate how do I become better at work, one of the micro skills I learned was to double dip. So whenever you do one task, try to figure out if there are multiple ways to apply that skill set, that knowledge that you have, that platform that you have to something else. So writing this book is really an extension of the day-to-day job I have at Harvard Medical School. So to me, it was a very strategic choice to say, I'm going to use all of this stuff that I do very regularly at work and take that content and put it into a book. I want to go back to your comment, if it's okay, about self-care, because I think it's so important. I'm really glad that you recognized it.
Oh, absolutely.
What happens a lot in the workplace, and I see this as a physician, I see the effects that work and stress have on our bodies, and it presents as high blood pressure, it presents as insomnia, it presents as weight gain and anxiety, is that we neglect our own personal needs for the workplace to help a company, generate profits. To this understanding that if I put my head down and I grind away, all of this effort will come back to me. And we actually open this book with a very harsh truth, which is that your job will never love you back. and I strongly believe that the actual job, the position, we're not referring to the people,
right.
position itself will never love you back. It's not going to grieve when you pass away. It's not, you know what I mean? It's going to go on. It needs to be filled. And so it's a harsh reality, right? It's a very raw truth, but we wanted to make sure that people understood that. And that's why we emphasize self-care. And I'll give you a quick story if it's okay.
Sure.
When I was earlier on in my career, I thought I needed to say yes to everything, even if it hurt me, right? If someone offered me something and I was going to have to stay up late at night to get it done, I felt like I'm going to say yes because it's good for my career. I want to be a good citizen for my team. I want to get promoted, all of these things. So I just indiscriminately said yes. And there was one day where I had my aha moment. It was an offer to join a panel at 7. It was like 7 o'clock. And believe it or not, the panel was on work-life balance. And it was a 7 p.m. panel. I had 2 children at the time. And I don't know if you have kids, but they are very ritualistic at bedtime. So I'm sitting there trying to you know, think about how am I going to do this panel while I put my kids to bed. But I said yes because I had true FOMO, fear of missing out. I was like, if I pass, they're never going to come back to me and ask me for more work. So I accepted it. And the night of, I'm getting ready for this panel, and my kids are banging on the door. You know, these New England apartments, there's no locks on the doorknob. So they're coming in and out of the panel, and I'm trying to put this dresser against the door to literally barricade my children out of the room so I can do this virtual panel. This was right during the pandemic. And I'm literally about to answer the first question, and my kids are banging on my door, "Mommy, let me in! Mommy, let me in!" And the first question they ask me, believe it or not, is, "Dr. Landry, can you tell us how you're able to balance work and life so well?" and it was such an aha moment for me, because I realized I was not there for my children, I was not there for the panel, and I was not there for myself, and I could feel it. I said, "This isn't healthy.
Yeah,
I'm so stressed right now. Like, who am I doing this for?" And so I started to create my first boundary, which was I stopped doing meetings from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. and started to prioritize family time during that window.
Right.
And you know what happened? Nothing. I didn't lose my job. I didn't get called into my supervisor's office. In fact, I was more productive during the day because I could rest. So this really goes back to this idea of success does not require self-sacrifice. Because I think when I started to create more well-demarcated boundaries, I was able to really focus during the day. I was able to think more about what I'm saying yes to. And I was able to just be more targeted with my work. And I think my career has really gone far and faster when I started to create very firm boundaries.
Well, obviously, I mean, the book and, you know, like you said, from the time you entered this industry to where you are today, it proves that you can do both. But we live under this misconception, and I want to expand a little bit on that, but I do want to just take a quick pause to remind folks that you're listening to The Public Eye right here on 90.5 WICN. We are your partner. We are your friend. We are your NPR affiliate right here in Central New England. And my guest this week is the author of the new book, Micro Skills, Dr. Adira Landry. And Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact. And this is really a book that Adira took from very personal feelings about how do you balance life, your professional life and your personal life. And you know, Adira, so many people, I hear this, I do it myself. I mean, I'm listening to you and thinking, man, yeah, you know, if you're not there right at 9 o'clock each and every day, or 8 o'clock, whatever time, you know, the organization opens up, then they're going to think ill of me. They'll think less of me. I won't get as much done if I don't stay an extra hour each and every night. But the part that resonated most with me is just what you said earlier. The job doesn't care. The job will be filled long after you or I are gone from this planet. And yet so many people, and I don't know, but let me run this by you. So many people say, well, he or she doesn't have anything else in life. Maybe they didn't have children. Maybe they didn't get married. Maybe they don't have a social life. I don't buy that. I think it can happen, as you said. You've got children. You got a husband. You got a lot going on in your personal life. So it really doesn't matter where you are in life. These stresses can affect all of us, right?
Work can be addicting. And some people don't realize they have an addiction to work. And also they have this addiction to loyalty, to being loyal to work. And I can respect that. And I can, in some ways, admire that someone really is addicted to the mission of the work. And so I don't want to make it seem like it's all a bad thing. I think what happens is when you lose yourself. I just recently wrote a piece for The Globe, actually, really related to this idea of not waiting to retire to live your day-to-day life. And, you know, as a physician, oh boy, it is so shocking how many times we see people coming into the emergency room for just, you know, back pain that they think might be a gallstone or a kidney stone. And unfortunately, we diagnose something much more serious or grave. Mm. And it's a wake-up call for folks. And, you know, I think it's really important to just remember that all of this, everything that we're doing is fleeting. And so our time is very valuable. You know, in the book, we open with three truths. The first truth is that time can only be spent. And I think, you know, that's the unique aspect of this book, a business self-help book being written by two physicians, is that we really understand just how fragile life is and how important our time is. And we want people to recognize that their time is now, right? You can't really put time into a savings bank and use it later, right? It's always moving along. You're just going to keep filling the time. So you should be thoughtful with how you're using it, how you're spending it. The second truth is that the world is not equal. You know, I've led a bunch of mentorship programs, career programs across the country. And everyone comes into the workplace, into a program with different knowledge, skill sets, pedigrees, right, where they did their education, networks, even their financial status is different. So the world is really not equal, and we all have different starting points, but we're hoping that this book levels the playing field for those who feel behind, for those who are like, I don't have a network. My parents aren't doctors or engineers or presidents of companies, so I don't know what success looks like because it wasn't really taught to me at home.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The third is that learning is limitless if it's accessible. I think we can all be our best selves, and that means different things to different people, but we can all be our best selves if we are just taught or modeled how to do that. And so making the content accessible to people is a really big barrier as well.
You, some of the bullet points that I've gotten in the liner notes as an introduction to the book. I've got the book now as well. But I noticed a number of them do touch upon what many people will talk about. I'm sure that you hear this all the time. You know, since the onset of technology, you know, I've got to answer all those emails, or I've got to get emails out. I've got to text this person right now. Well, I mean, Massachusetts has a law. If you are caught texting, you can get, you know, a ticket. Well, that doesn't really happen, but I see people still doing that. I'm thinking, you know, you really do need to take some time to slow down and not feel so. For me personally, because it relates to me, I mean, technology is somewhat of a wasn't something I grew up with. You know, boomers, we didn't have that back then. So learning these skills, some do it better than others. I find it intimidating. I find that it can be very stressful, especially if you master something and then all of a sudden it changes. And we talked about that a little bit before the broadcast. But in spite of the advances in technology, we know there's been a multitude of positive results because of technology. It's made, in many ways, made life easier, access to information, but it's also made it more stressful, has it not?
What you're describing is a very natural, impulsive feeling that we have, which is it's best to respond now so that I can get the work done. I can check off the box for my to-do list. And I think that is such a strong urge that many of us struggle to fight. I'm a millennial, so I didn't grow up with text message. I didn't get a phone until the end of my college years. Mm-hmm. But the addiction is there. I mean, I think many of us feel like if I could just respond.
Oh, I think we lost you.
Hello?
Yeah. Remember, I just want to remind folks that Adira and I, we kind of joked about this before. She said, if something goes wrong, if something goes ajar, will we have to start over? No, this is natural. This is what it's all about.
I was just referring to the addiction. Risa and I wrote an article a few years ago on compassionate email culture. It was for Harvard Business Review. And we talk about how, there are certain things that we can do to help protect our own inbox. But wouldn't it be better if we thought about the inbox of someone else? If we really thought about, should I send this email right now? This person I'm sending it to is on vacation. Or it's 3 a.m. and they're sleeping, and I really don't want to ding them, right? I don't want to interrupt their weekend. So just being compassionate about how we email, and that can be extended to how we text, right? Because for some people, text is very invasive. It feels like you're coming into my personal space now.
Yeah.
And so just being very thoughtful of the recipient and how we should create this culture of being very compassionate with how we communicate. And we talk a lot about that in the book, about being just very compassionate and thoughtful with how we send messages, when we send messages, to whom we send these messages, and just thinking, like, is this the right time? Is this the right medium? Have I processed whatever emotion I'm having? Am I sending an angry email? But just really thinking about the recipient and how they're going to receive the message. For us, it was a new way of thinking about communication.
And I'm so glad that you've emphasized, as you're discussing this evening, you keep utilizing the word compassion. I'm always fearful that, when you see, especially young people, you see them walking shoulder to shoulder, from school, just out doing their thing after school, and rather than look each other in the eye, they're texting each other, and it just aggravates me to no end. I want to just open the window and say, "What are you doing? Put that thing away." It's so easy. I think you know this better than anybody. It's just so easy to get wrapped up in things. And if this is what seems to be the norm now, you don't want to feel like the outcast. So you'll join in, even if it's not part of your, for lack of a better term, your DNA. So that must be another challenge that you have to face. We've only got a few moments, so I have to ask you though. Have you lost hope that, from all the things that we've been talking about, that not everybody performs at the same level, not everybody has the same skill sets. Some people are dynamic speakers, others are very shy. Some people write well, others, can't spell dog. And that adds, as you talked about, to stress. But are you personally, especially after writing the book and dealing with as many people as you do, there's still hope for this planet?
There's still hope. I think the majority of us actually have a growth mindset. I think the majority of us want to learn, want more knowledge. They want to be better. I mean, I think there is a very strong desire for people to figure out, how do I manage being employed and living this life?
Yeah.
And so I think many people are really interested in this content. The issue is just teaching it to them in a way that's accessible. You mentioned it earlier before we started, but we wanted to write a book that was very accessible. So we have written a book that we think Gen Zers, people who are graduating right now from high school, from college, would really, really benefit from. It's written for that person who has a mindset of, I just need information fast,
right?
I don't want tons and tons of data. Just give me the information. I want to download it really quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's written for that young generation. And yet, even last night, a colleague of mine who's in his 60s, sent me a message saying, I love this book so much. I have learned so many new things about work. So even though it's, for everyone, we do feel like the early career professionals are going to learn a lot of content. And we've seen those who are more senior reminded of how to work with other people who are younger.
I'm so glad that this has been a wonderful tool for people. And I'm already starting to, see things within myself from reading the book. So I feel the same way. Real quickly, before we close out, the book is widely available, Micro Skills. You can get that at your local bookstore. You can order it online. But if people want to reach out to you directly, Adira, is there a way of doing that? Email, website?
Yeah. And I love to connect with people. So I have a website, AdiraLandryMD.com. My co-author, Risa Lewis, has RisaLewisMD.com. We are both on social media, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter/X, Threads. Just by typing in our names, you'll find us. And we love to connect. We love to hear from people about what they thought about this episode as well as the book itself.
Absolutely. Terrific. The book is Micro Skills. My guest has been Dr. Adira Landry, co-author along with Risa Luis on this book. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.